WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. Today is a beautiful day to walk to fight breast cancer.
We are creating a sea of pink to fight back against breast cancer. We're expecting somewhere between 2,500 and 3,500 walkers.
The event's called Making Strides Against Breast Cancer, a downtown walk starting at 9 from the Tidal Basin.
It will be a lot of fun, and most importantly, raising awareness for breast cancer and the importance of screening.
Tawana Sewell with the American Cancer Society says the pandemic caused the number of women getting mammograms to fall off, and it's time to get back to it. John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
A suspect arrested after a woman reported a gallon of urine was thrown on her as she was walking in downtown D.C.
The police report says that she had urine all over her face, all over her head as well. We also spoke to a witness who watched it all unfold. He says he's never seen anything like this.
She was in extreme distress. First of all, she's being grabbed. She's being attacked out of nowhere, minding her own business on the way to work. And on top of that, she's now doused in someone else's urine. What do you do in a situation like that? I mean, it's gross. It's extreme.
Yeah, James Walker Jr. now charged with simple assault. McPherson Square, though, is an area where several people camp out. However, it's not known at this time if this man was homeless.
Correspondent Jacqueline Matter. A federal appeals court putting a temporary halt on President Biden's student loan forgiveness plan.
The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals has granted an emergency stay blocking the president's plan, but only until the court makes a final decision. And the White House wasted no time issuing a statement last night writing this. Tonight's temporary order does not prevent borrowers from applying for student debt relief at studentaid.gov, and we encourage eligible borrowers to join the nearly 22 million Americans whose information the Department of Education already has. This federal court response was prompted by lawsuits brought by six states. One lawsuit that had been dismissed on Thursday by a lower court, which ruled that the states as a collective lacked standing. Well, it was only this week that the website to apply for loan forgiveness went live. And the St. Louis Bay Court of Appeals is expediting this case.
Fox's Alexandria Hoff. The Phillies beat the San Diego Padres in Game 3 of the National League Championship Series.
The Phillies topped the Padres 4-2 to take a 2-1 series lead. Philadelphia won its first home postseason game in 12 years. Kyle Schwarber led off the first inning with a second homer of the series, this one off Joe Musgrove. Schwarber led the NL with 46 regular season home runs. After San Diego tied the score, Gene Segura delivered a two-run single in the fourth to give Philly a 3-1 edge. Alec Bohm added another run in the sixth with an RBI double. Sir Anthony Dominguez picked up a six-out save. Bob Mortali, Fox News.
The Phillies and Padres will face off again tonight in Philadelphia. Meanwhile, the Yankees will host the Astros. First pitch in that game set for just after 5. WMAL traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic and weather, LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County on the inner loop of the Beltway in Silver Spring, there is a disabled vehicle. Center lane is blocked at Georgia Avenue. On the outer loop of the Beltway in Montgomery County, no delays there. Prince George's County is clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Also in Prince George's County, between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, no delays northbound or southbound. And in Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, you're not tapping the brakes on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Looking good and feeling great for the day with daytime high temperatures ranging from the upper 60s to lower 70s. Winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy overnight. May see a few showers. Temperatures in the 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers are likely. Temperatures in the 60s. We clear things out on Monday with highs near 70 degrees. We keep the mild weather on Tuesday with a cold front on Wednesday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Root in the First Alert Weather Center.
It's 57 right now in Beltsville, 60 at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi is with us every week. White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
You had an interesting article this week in the headline on it. Most major polls skewed to Democrats by 4 to 5 percentage points. What does that mean in these super tight races around the country?
simply put, Rick, it means that these races that give leads to various Democrats are probably dead even or Republican even ahead. This is the conclusion of the two owners of a new website, pollingmonitor.com, that essentially looks back at the history of polls going back to 2016 and how prominent polls, be they the New York Times Siena poll or the Quinnipiac poll, fared in the elections statewide in all those three cycles. The creators of the site put the average in of the final polls and found in virtually every case the polls are skewered to the Democrats by 4 to 5 percentage points. Spence Abraham Jr., one of the co-owners of Polling Monitor, walked me through this. The Quinnipiac poll that we read about just about every day as a poll covering different races around the country, it pointed out that the race in Georgia had Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock at 52%, Republican Herschel Walker 45%, and the Libertarian candidate Chase Oliver in single digits. Now, according to Mr. Abraham, on an average of 4.6 points, this, in his words, outweighs the Democrats. That's the record of Quinnipiac in Georgia. So he says it's probably a direct tie between Warnock and Walker. Similarly, the USA Today Suffolk poll in Pennsylvania had Democrat John Fetterman leading Republican Dr. Mehmet Oz by 46 to 40% the last time it tracked the voters. Abraham says in all likelihood it's a dead split between the two protagonists in the most closely watched Senate race in the country, bar none. Based on historical records, the USA Today Suffolk poll is skewered 5.8% to the Democrats. I could go on, but the very simple conclusion is when you see any poll statewide for governor, senator, or another office, just look at it carefully, and you'll find that if the Democrat has to the edge, it's probably dead even.
Gary, Indiana, the home of the Jackson Five. You write about Gary, Indiana, but not about the Jackson Five. You write about Democrat Representative Frank Mervin. And what is the indicator in that one congressional district in Gary, Indiana?
Well, this is worth watching because Gary has, without hesitation, sent a Democrat to the U.S. House since 1930. You have to go back to 1928 to find when a Republican carried Gary. Well, Frank Mervin, freshman Democrat, a product of the Gary Democratic machine, is locked in a race that the respected Cook Political Report says too close to call. Jennifer Ruth Green, former Air Force officer, pilot, and a Republican who happens to be black, has actually outraised him with more than $1 million to $900,000 for the embattled incumbent. Recently, the Congressional Black Caucus made a decision to send $5,000 to Frank Mervin, who is white, meaning they were going on the record as opposing the woman who would be the first congresswoman who happens to be a Republican and black. A little bit of history there. That gave her swatches of publicity. In any event, if a district like Indiana 1 is too close to call, given all its Democratic coloration and history, then Democrats nationwide are in the proverbial hot water.
Well, speaking of being in hot water, Steve Bannon made history, but it might cost him 4 months in the slammer.
It certainly might. He was convicted of contempt of Congress, and on Friday, judge sentenced him to 4 months in prison or a fine. Okay, in all likelihood, Mr. Bannon won't see a day in prison. There's been plenty of people charged with contempt of Congress, notably former Attorney General Eric Holder, and yet it turns out that this is eventually bartered, bargained, and the charge goes away. According to my colleague Logan Raddick at Newsmax, you have to go back to 1948 to Dalton Trumbo and Robert Rosen and other screenwriters known as the Hollywood Ten, who declined to answer questions from a congressional committee about whether they belonged to the Communist Party. The committee counsel, Bob Stripling, promptly produced their membership cards, which found them in contempt of Congress, and they went to prison for varied terms. It's not going to go that far with Steve Bannon. In all likelihood, it's going to be negotiated, and he will have considerable publicity yelling about this right up to the election, as only Steve Bannon could do.
You would think 2.5 weeks out from the election that President Biden might be out on the campaign trail this weekend. He's going to be home in Delaware, but somebody else is going to come out to bail him out that might be a bit more popular.
You're talking about his former ticket mate, the popular former president, Barack Obama. That's right. President Obama will hit the campaign trail, and in particular, he's scheduled to go to Georgia to try to save Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock, and he'll go to Wisconsin to campaign for Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, locked in a close race with Republican Senator Ron Johnson. I might add, I've covered Mandela Barnes, and he's been called the next Obama, a centrist and dynamic Democrat, but who is well-liked by the far left of the party. The similarities are apparent, and it's sure that the president will note that. I might add that if President Obama is getting this attention, and Joe Biden is sort of going to take a back seat to his predecessor, then one must conclude that Democrats feel Obama packs a little bit more of a punch and the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Liz Truss, the new and now former prime minister in the UK, also making history this week for a reason she probably didn't want.
No, and I don't think that Liz Truss is going to enjoy looking at every newspaper, every opening line on a website in the world to be reminded that she will have served the shortest tenure of any occupant of number 10 Downing Street in British history, 44 days. It turned out that the markets reacted in a hostile way to her economic policy, which was tax cuts for everybody, but also having cash for those people in Britain to buy energy tax credits as they face a cold winter. Russia not likely to sell any gasoline or energy products to the Brits. In any event, the markets reacted in a hostile way, and her Chancellor of the Exchequer, Jeremy Hunt, seemed to be taking over control of the government as he publicly scrapped the Prime Minister's economic agenda. She finally threw in the towel on Thursday morning. And what's most interesting, who was at the first name on everybody's lips as the successor to Liz Truss as leader of the Conservative Party, and the once and future Prime Minister, Boris Johnson? It could happen.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. We hit the Hollywood 10 and the Jackson 5 in the same segment.
And we closed with Boris, too.
We'll see you next week.
See you, Rick.
7:18 now on the Saturday Morning Update. We'll talk to Cheryl Atkinson next, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, I looked at the cameras around the Beltway. I didn't see any crashes, no reports of any construction being set up, so you're going to be at the posted speed limit on the inner loop and on the outer loop. Now to 66 in Fairfax County. No delays on the eastbound side or on the westbound side. To 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. You're not tapping the brakes northbound or southbound. And on 295, 395, and 695 in the district, lanes are clear and at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Looking good and feeling great for the day with daytime high temperatures ranging from the upper 60s to lower 70s. Winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy overnight. May see a few showers. Temperatures in the 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers are likely. Temperatures in the 60s. We clear things out on Monday with highs near 70 degrees. We keep the mild weather on Tuesday with a cold front on Wednesday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Root in the First Alert Weather Center.
42 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. Thank you for being with us this weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Cheryl Atkinson is with us, the host of Full Measure, every Sunday, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
Very interesting interview you have tomorrow with an FBI whistleblower. Ooh, what is on tap?
Well, I think people were wondering when more insiders might come forward with all the scandals and controversies at the FBI. I mean, just the proven ones, such as the FBI deflecting on the Hunter Biden laptop before the election, and the FBI attorney convicted of doctoring a document to spy on the Donald Trump campaign. I mean, there's one thing after another. Well, now apparently, Rick, they are talking. There's been probably a dozen or so current FBI employees that have been talking to members of Congress, and I have an interview with one of them who is willing to speak publicly. This will be a Sunday on Full Measure, and talking about what he thinks is going wrong inside the agency and what happened to him when he spoke about it.
So what type of areas does he address?
Well, I spoke with him about his objection to a couple of cases he worked on. One of them was the kidnapping plot against Governor Whitmer. You may remember that was right before the 2020 election. Oh, these right-wing militia groups plotted to kidnap her, very dangerous. And then, well, he was part of the TAC team that made the raid and some of the arrests on that case and said he thought he did a good job because he believed those people were a dire threat. And then what came out at trial was he said a different story, where it turned out there were many FBI agents and informants in the militia group, including the leader of the militia group, planning and doing the plot against the governor. So it was driven by the FBI, in his view. And he felt really uncomfortable about that, you know, feeling like that was an element of entrapment. Fast forward to him getting assigned to some of the January 6th cases. He talks about how so many of those are being pursued, even though he thinks a lot of them are without merit. Some of them were violent. He thinks those people should be prosecuted. But he says the FBI is using a heavy hand against people that were on video confirming what they'd said, that they didn't commit a crime, that they walked in, the police allowed them in, they're allowed to be on the Capitol grounds. And he said they're being treated like violent criminals, not even being allowed to turn themselves in if they have a lawyer, the normal procedures that would be happening. And he refused to take part in one of the raids on some of these suspects. And at that point, he was told by, he says, by his supervisor that he had fringe beliefs and that he ought to reconsider, you know, his career as an FBI agent.
So what does happen to his career at this point if he's speaking out?
Well, since he refused to do the raid and he also has brought concerns to Congress and filed formal complaints, he's been suspended without pay. And from what he says, there are quite a few like him, that when these agents are speaking up internally about what they see as abuse of power or something that's going wrong, they are being told, he says, that they're fringe or they're insurrectionist supporters and their clearances are being pulled and they can pretty much kiss their careers goodbye. But it's happening to enough of them that at least he thinks there may be more speaking out and that it could, he hopes, turn into something that helped right or correct some of the wrongs that he thinks have been done at the FBI.
We hear more and more about self-driving cars. We hear about autopilot. And it still creeps me out a little bit as to what could possibly go wrong. But I believe you all look into it tomorrow.
We do. Lisa Fletcher's looking into it because I've done quite a bit of reporting and rides in these self-driving cars and the self-driving taxis. And I'm one of those people that's like, yeah, it feels a little funny, but I figure we'll all be doing it in 5 years or 10 years and wondering what the problem was, you know, that why we were scared of it. However, there are some crashes and some trends that are disturbing enough that the federal government has opened an investigation into the Tesla auto driving function to see if there's something inherently unsafe about it. There are some other high technologies in cars that are being looked at. But I think the most surprising thing that Lisa found, this stuff is pretty unregulated. You would think the government just seems so anxious to regulate so many things at times, and yet there's no standards that she found, sort of like standards that they have to meet for technology and safety, unlike the European Union, which is very strict on the auto-driving cars. So I think that's one of the main things you'll get out of the story when you see some of the safety concerns is that there's so little federal regulation of them.
Well, it kind of reminds me of the local regulations when it comes to Uber. You remember that taxi drivers would have to go through all kinds of trainings. In New York, they had to buy medallions that cost up to $100,000. They were all under these strict regulations. And then all of a sudden, Uber and Lyft come along, and I don't know whatever happened to regulation when it comes to safety.
Well, it's funny. A lot of times they regulate the things you think they don't need to and the few things you want them to. Lisa says part of the reason probably is because there's a strong lobby that doesn't want the government to step in, and, of course, they're calling a lot of shots. And secondly, the government, she says, wants to be tech neutral and not appear as though it's discouraging advancement of new technology. So those could be some of the reasons.
So many political polls are out right now, but let's turn to another way to look at things and how people are feeling. And you look into a happiness poll?
Yes, I spoke to Big Chief at Gallup about a really interesting measure of happiness. They actually can measure the happiness of a society by certain ways that they look at that they say are pretty well established. But they talk about how happiness as a measure is something that is often overlooked by society's leaders, and yet maybe one of the most important measures and one of the most important predictors of things to come. And it's better when he explains it, but he's going to talk about why people ought to be paying more attention to the measure of their society's happiness.
Those stories tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7. It's Full Measure with Cheryl Atkison. Cheryl, thank you as always.
Thank you.
7:26 now, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Coming up, we got Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland, so stick around with us. We have a programming note for you as of this morning. Garden Sense will be moving to 105 this afternoon. So if you're planning to listen to Garden Sense, it's on this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour. And coming up this morning, right after the 8 o'clock news, it's Retirement Key Radio. You've heard the show a lot on the weekends. Abe Abish will be joining us in the 8 o'clock hour moving forward, and Garden Sense moving to 1 o'clock, and it all happens today. It's 7:30. Maria Leaf is in the WMAL newsroom.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. A North Carolina school district votes to forfeit games against a high school with a transgender volleyball player.
The school board in Cherokee County, North Carolina, says the county won't participate in any girls' volleyball games against a rival school after a transgender athlete reportedly injured a girl by powerfully spiking a ball. Instead, the county will forfeit those games. Despite the growing controversy over transgender females playing on girls' teams, the school board making it clear the issue is safety, not gender. The athletic director at Hiwassee Dam High School, where the injured player attends, says he supports last month's school board vote. Carmen Roberts, Fox News.
Several states have passed laws requiring athletes to participate in sports based on their biological sex. A new poll shows the New York governor's race is beginning to tighten.
A recent Quinnipiac University poll finds that a little more than 2 weeks before Election Day, New York's incumbent Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul holds a slight edge over her Republican challenger, Congressman Lee Zeldin, 50-46%. The poll of about 1,600 likely voters has a 2.4% margin of error. Hochul leads in New York City 59-37%, with Zeldin leading in upstate New York 52-44%. Those polled were asked to choose the most urgent issue facing New York voters, and crime was ranked first at 28%, followed by inflation at 20%, and protecting democracy with 14%. In New York, Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the Phillies beat the Padres last night 4-2. They'll face off again this evening in Philadelphia, while the Yankees will host the Astros with first pitch set for just after 5. WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WML Traffic and Weather, LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Taking a look at the Beltway, both in Maryland and in Virginia. Around the Beltway, no crashes or construction on the inner loop or on the outer loop. In Montgomery County on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, that's clear both directions. On 95 between the two Beltways in Maryland, you're not tapping the brakes. Same thing on the BW Parkway. On 66 in Fairfax County, no delays eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, go ahead and set your cruise control. Lanes are wide open. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Looking good and feeling great for the day with daytime high temperatures ranging from the upper 60s to lower 70s. Winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy overnight. May see a few showers. Temperatures in the 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers are likely. Temperatures in the 60s. We clear things out on Monday with highs near 70 degrees. We keep the mild weather on Tuesday with a cold front on Wednesday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Root in the First Alert Weather Center.
It is 34 right now in Frederick, 43 at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
First thing each morning, O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor. Weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us every week. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, also the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
So, Tony, as we look at Ukraine, and we look at Vladimir Putin's strategies, he is continuing to target the infrastructure, and he's possibly looking at something even more evil than what he's done already.
And it's basically a focus on primary and critical infrastructure that produces power for Ukraine. And the latest target, if you will, the focus is a dam that provides a huge amount of energy. And essentially this dam, hydroelectric power plant near Kherson, the Kherson Oblast, is being mined and prepared for destruction should the Russians decide to do something. And this is a critical piece because not only is it important to generating electricity, it's an important bridge over a major river. So what we've seen over the past month is a direct and continuous pounding of infrastructure. This is just the latest. And this could be catastrophic if they do it. This could actually also create conditions of flooding in a number of areas in this area, this region of Ukraine. So it's very clear at this point that Putin's tactics have changed. They're much more personal, not being reported to any great degree that I see, but on a daily basis, the people of Ukraine do not have power. They have a number of issues relating to the fact that the Russians have also been hitting power stations. Instead, they've been trying to stay away from hitting parts of the infrastructure that generate power, per se. They're not going after the turbines. They're going after the power relay stations, which are more easily repairable than the actual turbines which generate the power. With that said, it's very clear that Putin is doing everything he can right now to make the people of Ukraine suffer in this current war.
You know, when you step back from this a little bit, Tony, we're in the new millennium. It's 2022. You're looking at this evil, evil, sinister man, and the world can't seem to do anything about it. You know, we heard about war crimes, and we've seen the evidence of the mass graves and the torture and everything else this man is doing, and the world can't stop it. I don't know. I mean, I don't have the answer, but you've got the United Nations, you've got NATO, you've got the United States of America, and we can't seem to put the brakes on this guy. It's mind-boggling to me.
This is controversial, and you may get some hate mail on this. This is a policy choice to not end it, Rick. We do have either the military means or the diplomatic means. The policy by the Biden administration is just not to pursue either with vigor. They're doing enough to keep the Ukrainians armed and providing enough to allow them to push back and make some ground. But look, the Russian troops are showing up for the offensive. My last briefing told me that they've got about 250,000 to 300,000 they're calling up. Those folks are all showing up in their defensive sites, which are going to be turned to the offensive as soon as the ground freezes. And on the diplomatic side, Biden, they're doing nothing. There's absolutely no effort to actually get both parties to the table to negotiate a ceasefire. So this is a policy choice, and I believe the Biden administration wants this as a distraction, especially due to the upcoming elections. They use it all the time. So it's very sad. I feel horrible for the Ukrainian people who are caught in the middle, but I think that's what's going on. That's why there's no effort to stop it.
Let me challenge you a little bit on that.
And
sure. The question would be, we've seen the guy threatening to use nuclear weapons. We hear that he's got health issues. We hear that he may be mentally unstable. I mean, obviously he is for the kind of atrocities he's committing. Is part of the administration strategy based on the idea that if we poke the bear a little too hard, he might start using nuclear weapons?
I think the poking of the bear has merit, no doubt. No doubt, because we have spoken right here on the show about the issue regarding nuclear weapons, and that is the ultimate tripwire that nobody wants to cross. With that said, Rick, the very thing you just said, he's mad, but he's evil, but he's not completely insane. He's very rational, and even with a madman, you can sit down at a table and talk to him if you figure out to make it personal. One of the things President Trump did is he made it very personal. He basically had threatened Putin, saying, if something happens, I'm going to come after you, and things are going to happen to you directly. The Biden administration just won't do that. And regarding the fact that, yes, there's all these issues related to his goals and his objectives, we've not done anything to tamp those down. All the different sanctions have done nothing. The Chinese continue to double down, working with him more directly. Ultimately, we have not used the levers that are available to get him to the table, to get to a negotiating position where we can stop it. And so there is no effort at all on the diplomatic side to do that. So that's why I do believe, despite everything you said being completely true, there's no interest in the Biden administration to do anything to actually stop the war at this point.
Let's turn to the southern border. Report now that the Customs and Border Protection, which is a federal agency, releasing numbers, the highest ever annual number of migrants crossing the southern border illegally, 2.37 million. That does not include the gotaways. In September, a 12% increase over August.
Right.
When does it stop?
Well, let me do a contrast as we're talking about numbers. Look, I just mentioned that the Russians are about to unleash a 300,000-man invasion force on Ukraine. We're talking essentially 3.7 million people invading our country through the southwest border and being unchecked. Think about that. Think about the numbers here. And, yeah, it's a real issue with the fact that there are so many folks coming across now, even Democrats, who are leaders along the border are having to bus people out of the region. And I think we've seen this with New York. New York City's complaining about these issues with the Democratic mayors sending people north. And it's going to collapse not only CBP and some other organizations. If it continues, you're going to see economic collapse of a number of places along the border. They just can't continue to sustain this number of people coming across. And I don't know what it's going to take for the Biden administration to actually return to the policies which were working, which was having Mexico essentially do a better job of keeping refugee holders, seekers in place in Mexico, and actually closing the border. But it may take, you know, some military action by the governors along the border using their National Guard against the federal government if this continues.
Got about a minute left. Have
sure.
you seen any evidence that the border czar, Vice President Harris's efforts to get at the root causes in Nicaragua, Cuba, Venezuela, wherever those issues are, have you seen any evidence that any of her efforts are having any impact whatsoever?
No, not at all. And that was one of the factors that, again, the Trump administration, I try not to sound partisan here, Trump administration had been able to successfully negotiate with a number of those countries to make sure those countries used their internal law enforcement and military resources to turn back folks, to not allow the transit across their country to Mexico and into the United States. That's not being done at all. And there's been no effort by Vice President Harris to do any of that. And again, let me be very clear, because it's a policy issue, not a political issue. The policy right now is to allow the people to come to the border. Once they're at the border, there's a number of essentially open ranges where they can walk across with very little molestation, if any at all. And this is a policy choice by this administration to allow this to continue to expand. And the American people, especially the people of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, are the ones suffering for it.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, the Thought to Action podcast that Tony hosts is at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It is 7:46 on the Saturday Morning Update. KT McFarland next, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
On the Beltway, both in Virginia and Maryland, I didn't see any crashes or construction in the traffic cameras. All lanes are clear and at speed right now. In Fairfax County on 66, eastbound and westbound lanes are clear. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes in either direction. Now in D.C., on 295, 395, and 695, don't have any reports of any crashes or construction slowing you down. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Looking good and feeling great for the day with daytime high temperatures ranging from the upper 60s to lower 70s. Winds from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy overnight. May see a few showers. Temperatures in the 40s. Mostly cloudy tomorrow. Showers are likely. Temperatures in the 60s. We clear things out on Monday with highs near 70 degrees. We keep the mild weather on Tuesday with a cold front on Wednesday. I'm 7 News meteorologist Steve Root in the First Alert Weather Center.
42 degrees, 7:47, Saturday Morning Update. Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
We were talking to Tony Schaefer a little bit ago about our situation with Ukraine, Russia, NATO, and I'd like to get your assessment. I mean, with all of the foreign policy experience that you've had in your career, where do you see the status of the U.S., Ukraine, and Russia?
I'm worried that we're in an escalation cycle with Putin, where each side is taking incremental steps up that escalation ladder. You know, 40 years ago, I wrote my dissertation at MIT, God, 45 years ago, on the escalation ladder between China and the Soviet Union on a battle conflict on the border and would it escalate to nuclear war. The worry is that every side takes a slightly, you know, I'll see you and I'll raise you one approach. So Ukraine bombs the bridge to Crimea. Russia bombs the civilian infrastructure in Ukraine. And I'm worried that the next 2 weeks are particularly dangerous because both NATO and Russia are doing routine exercises. And a slight mistake could trigger an unwarranted response. You know, this is a really hard time to keep a level head, certainly for Putin, who is paranoid by nature. And he realizes that this is a fight to the finish for him personally, as well as for Russia. You know, he can't survive in office if he loses in Ukraine. But in a funny way, it's kind of a hard time for the U.S., too, because we're in the middle of an election cycle. And the Republican war hawks, the neocons, and the Biden war hawks, the globalists, they jump on anybody who suggests that a negotiated solution must be a Putin lover, that Ukraine has to win and Putin has to lose. He is the aggressor, and yes, in a just world, he would be forced from office and held accountable for war crimes. But it's not a just world. And if Putin's choices, as he sees them, are personal destruction and a larger war, I doubt if he's going to choose personal destruction. And in the United States, I mean, we should have a lot of concerns, but our main concern, I think, should always be American interests first. And so we're now in a situation where neither the U.S. or Russia have an incentive to find an off-ramp, even though the road that we're on could lead to an escalation and perhaps even a U.S.-Russia conflict that nobody wants. Well, nobody except for China, because China's the only country that wins that war. And so if Ukraine can't win the war, I think they could win the peace. Let me explain. Because if Ukraine plays the long game, as Reagan did with the Soviet Union, 5 years after the fighting stops, by then the West is going to immediately rush in to rebuild Ukraine, to invest in Ukraine. And within 5 years, Ukraine is going to be fully integrated into the European economy. Meanwhile, 5 years after the fighting stops, Russia will still be isolated, a pariah state, and a poor investment for anybody. So Russia will be a waning power while Ukraine a rising power. And I believe that the next U.S. president is going to be forced, whether he wants to or not, and I hope he wants to, is going to be forced to stop the American war on fossil fuels.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that because we saw the president tapping the strategic oil reserves once again. A lot of people are saying that's politically motivated this close to election day on the midterms. Where do you see this whole scenario with oil, and will Biden wake up at some point? Will the administration wake up on oil and the inflation problem?
I don't think they're going to wake up at all. You know, look, it's almost certain that the next president is going to have to reverse Biden's war on fossil fuels, whether even if it's a Democrat, because U.S. is headed into a recession. Everybody knows we're going into a recession, driven in large part by the high energy prices. We're also headed into a global recession, especially in Europe, again, driven by high energy prices. So I don't think the next U.S. president has a choice. And right now, President Biden, I mean, the guy that, you know, everybody always looks to history of who does this person remind you of? What is this era suggest to you? Well, Biden has become the Marie Antoinette of the 21st century. You know, Marie Antoinette, famous French, the wife of the French king, she told peasants who were starving, well, if they have no bread, let them eat cake. And she and the entire French ruling class were oblivious to the suffering of their people. And the French Revolution was the result. Now, Biden is saying to everybody, well, there's no recession, there's no inflation, there's no energy crisis. Meanwhile, he's licking ice cream cones, his equivalent of let them eat cake. And the Washington elites, like the French aristocracy, they're cheering him on. But meanwhile, the people outside of Washington across the country are suffering. And it's going to result in his certain defeat if he runs. And if he doesn't run and some other Democrat runs on his same war on American fossil fuels, they're going to certainly be defeated. The only Democrat who can win is a Democrat who runs away from Biden's energy policy. And I don't think you'll find a Democrat who can be nominated by the Democratic Party who's going to do that. So I think that guarantees a Republican victory. And the first thing the Republican president's going to do on January 1201, on January 20th, 2025, is reverse Biden's war on fossil fuels and have America once again produce fossil fuels. It'll fix the economy. It'll solve our inflationary problems. And it will, at the same time, make a country like Russia bankrupt.
Well, it just strikes me that you would think, with all of the polls showing how people feel about the Democratic priorities, it's like they're not paying any attention whatsoever to what the American people are worried about now. I mean, it's inflation, it's the economy, and they're hanging their hat on the abortion issue. I guess the reason they have to do that is because they don't have too much to say positive on what they're doing on oil prices and inflation. So I guess they're ignoring the key issues.
Well, they have to remember that this actually is a democracy. That even though in Washington, and when they've got this sort of unholy trifecta of the Democrat Party, the Washington establishment, and the media, they think that they're the only people that count. And it's an internal echo chamber where, of course, nobody in Washington feels inflation. They get cost of living increases. Of course, nobody in Washington worries about a recession because they can never lose their jobs. They have guaranteed, except Joe Biden, they have guaranteed, federal workers have guaranteed, you know, job security. So they're not experiencing in a fundamental daily, every hour of the day way that the rest of the country is experiencing their flawed policies, particularly their economic policies, not to mention, you know, the defund the police and the woke agenda and all the other stuff they're promoting. They're so out of tune and out of touch with the American people that they're going to get a shellacking, and deservedly so, because they've forgotten the first fundamental principle of anyone who seeks elective office in the United States, that indeed we are a democracy. And as Ronald Reagan said famously, we don't work for them, they work for us.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
It is 7:59. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And a programming note, Garden Sense is moving to 1 o'clock this afternoon. So we will be joining you at 1 today for Garden Sense. And we welcome Retirement Key Radio into the 8 o'clock slot. Abe Abish will be joining us right after the 8 o'clock news. And we will see you this afternoon at 1 for Garden Sense.